Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
It's Friday, the 15th of December, and we are counting down to Christmas. Good to have you on board. I'm Jane Ayeka-Kumet in Bonn, Germany.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwaura. Now, Zimbabwe's ZANU-PF meets to confirm President Mnangagwa as party leader ahead of the 2018 general elections.
My ascendance to the helm of the party must never be interpreted as a defeat of one faction and installation of another.
And just next door, South Africa's ANC party looks set to elect a new party leader, but some South Africans see no hope in the party.
Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma has failed, even on the AU. Cyril Ramaphosa, he is a friend of the white monopoly capitalists who are eating from the poor.
Also have no confidence in the current crop of leadership that the ANC has.
And we shall also hear the latest on Brexit talks as the European Union gives the green light for the second stage. But first, let's listen to what's been happening around the world.
I'm Natalie Muller with the DW News. The International Criminal Court has awarded $10 million in compensation to former child soldiers recruited by convicted Congolese warlord Thomas Lubanga. The reparation is the largest of its kind. In an announcement on Friday, the court said the money would pay for psychological support and job training for the 425 victims identified in the case. All were under the age of 15 when they were abducted and forced into Lubanga's militia during fighting in the northeast of the Democratic Republic of Congo between 2002 and 2003. Lubanga was convicted in 2012 of committing war crimes and is currently serving a 14-year prison sentence. Meanwhile, Dutch judges have sentenced a 63-year-old man to life in prison for war crimes committed during Ethiopia's brutal purges in the late 1970s. Etchetu Alemu was found guilty of torturing and killing opponents of the former Marxist regime known as the Derg, including the execution of 75 young prisoners. The Derg was led by former dictator Mengistu Haile Mariam, who was ousted in 1991 and now lives in exile in Zimbabwe. European Union leaders have given the green light for Brexit talks with Britain to move on to the second phase. The breakthrough came after British Prime Minister Theresa May and her EU counterparts reached a deal on Britain's divorce payment, the future of Irish border, and citizens' rights. The next round of negotiations will focus on the UK's future trade relationship with the EU after it leaves the bloc in March 2019. German Chancellor Angela Merkel said she was optimistic but warned tough work lies ahead.
In the end, we talked about the question of Britain leaving the European Union. We've made quite significant progress. Phase two may now begin. But we realized that obviously this phase of negotiation is going to be even harder.
You're listening to DW News, coming to you from Bonn, Germany. South Africa's ruling African National Congress says it expects to announce a new leader to succeed Jacob Zuma at its party conference on Sunday. The favourites for the top job are Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa and Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, a former cabinet minister and President Zuma's ex-wife. Zuma's leadership has been plagued by a series of corruption scandals and damaging splits between rival factions within the ANC. Still, given the party's dominance in South Africa, whoever replaces him has a strong chance of becoming the country's next president in elections in 2019. In Germany, the leader of the centre-left Social Democrats, Martin Schulz, says his party is ready to begin exploratory coalition talks with Chancellor Angela Merkel's Conservatives. The SPD had previously ruled out supporting a Merkel-led government, but it has come under pressure to reconsider after Merkel failed to build an alternative three-way coalition. Schulz stressed that entering into talks did not mean a commitment to forming a government, saying a decision on that question would ultimately have to be ratified by party members. For more news and information, you can visit our website at dw.com. I'm Natalie Muller.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link. My name is Wanjiko Mwaura.
And I'm Jane Ayeka-Kumet. Remember, we are live on Facebook, so do let us know your thoughts on the stories we are covering or any other you might want to cover.
Now, we start off in Zimbabwe, where the ruling party, ZANU-PF, has just endorsed Mnangagwa as party leader and presidential candidate for the 2018 elections. For the first time since its formation in 1963, former President Robert Mugabe, who was a key founding member, was not in attendance.
Now, that's not all that is happening in Zimbabwe, but we also know that since taking office, Mnangagwa has vowed to transform the country. But the opposition leaders recently called on the international community not to recognize his government. He is accused of going after his opponents in the guise of clamping down on corruption. Wajiku, you've been catching up with Columbus Mavunga in Harare. What exactly did he say?
Well, he starts by describing the mood at the Congress. Take a listen.
Here at the ZANU-PF Extraordinary Congress is the first one where President Robert Mugabe is not there, and more importantly, he is not the leader of the party. People seem to be happier than all the previous years that I've attended. This is my 17th one, and I think there's more freedom. People are saying what they want.
Do you get the impression that the ZANU-PF comrade feel that President Mnangagwa have their back?
I'm sure the comrades here, as they call each other, they are saying they now have a leader who can listen to them and who has time for them.
And is this by any means as a result of what transpired during the political meeting of the ZANU-PF officials just recently?
Yeah, the last meeting that happened when Emmerson Mnangagwa, who is now the president, was in exile, recalled President Mugabe and then said Emmerson Mnangagwa is now the leader of the party, subject to the confirmation which happened today. And when that happened just a few minutes ago, the president, Mnangagwa, was very magnanimous. He knew he has got a lot on his plate. Just take a listen to what he said.
My ascendance to the helm of the party must never be interpreted as a defeat of one faction and installation of another. My presence should not be perceived as a rise in the fortunes of a region or a tribe or a totem. No. My presidency is about a united ZANU-PF, a national party with a national outlook. I stand before you, therefore, as the president of a united, non-racial Zimbabwe.
Now, after this, you know, very proud statement, and I would say, you know, ready to work hard towards the future, how much support does President Mnangagwa actually have to help him achieve his proposed changes?
He knows he can't do it alone. So he has tried to reach the West by bending the laws, as it were, to twist the laws that Mugabe had imposed. For example, the indigenization, which would take the majority stake of any company that a foreigner would have.
There have also been reports that the elections could actually happen before the planned June period. Why is that? Yeah.
The answer, I'm sure, lies with Mr. Mnangagwa. We have said that. But one would speculate that he would want to ride on the euphoria which is prevailing in Zimbabwe, where people are saying, Mnangagwa, you've managed to remove Mr. Mugabe, who has been on top of Zimbabwe for 37 years, and he would want to get into the election while that euphoria is still there, before people start to feel that, well, it might have been Mugabe yesterday. It's now Mnangagwa. Today is still the same.
Columbus Mavunga in Harare. And we remain within the region and just move to the neighbouring country, and that's South Africa. There, the ruling ANC party is set to hold its national assembly, in which a new leader will be elected to replace President Jacob Zuma.
The contest is tight between Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa and Zuma's ex-wife and former AU chairperson Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma. Chances are that whoever is elected will not only be the party's presidential candidate for elections due in 2019, but will be charged with restoring the party's lost glory. The ANC under Zuma's leadership has experienced infighting and allegations of crime.
Subri Govender in South Africa gives us a preview ahead of the conference starting tomorrow.
The contest for the election of either Zuma's deputy, Cyril Ramaphosa, or his ex-wife, Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, as new party leader, has been tight and very intense in the final days. The ANC's alliance partners, the Congress of South African Trade Unions, COSATU, and the Communist Party, are backing Ramaphosa, as is the ANC's Veterans League. The ANC's Women's League and the Youth League are for Dlamini-Zuma. Here's Cyril Ramaphosa speaking at one of his last appearances before the vote.
I'm confident that we are going to have a very, very successful conference. It's going to be a peaceful conference. There's going to be a lot of comradeship flowing at this conference as we move forward to elect the leaders of the ANC and to adopt the policies of the ANC.
Ramaphosa has made it very clear that one of his main tasks, if elected, would be to promote the economy so that extreme unemployment, poverty and inequality could be effectively tackled. His rival, Dlamini-Zuma, a former chairperson of the African Union Commission, has had to contend with being labelled the candidate of Jacob Zuma. She has come up with a new slogan, Radical Economic Transformation, in her bid to win support.
If I win, I will be engaging all players and explaining to them are the challenges which they know themselves, and saying to them, as patriotic South Africans, what are the solutions? This is how we see things from the ANC. How do they see things? How do we tackle these challenges?
Ordinary South Africans are divided over who they think will be best for the country.
I think for me, the person with the very proven track record will be Cyril. So in terms of going to business-wise, creating job and unity and confidence, I think.
Personally, I would like Nkosazana Zuma to be the president. She's been a very good leader. I think she can do a better job. Nkosazana Zuma is the right candidate for me at the moment.
Other people are not impressed by either candidate.
Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma has failed, even on the AU. Cyril Ramaphosa, he is a friend of the white monopoly capitalists who are eating from the poor.
I have no confidence in any of those two people. I also have no confidence in the current crop of leadership that the ANC has. Come 2019, I don't see ANC emerging. The best thing that's going to happen to South Africa, we're going to see a coalition government.
Subri Govender in South Africa. And now to Brussels, where there seems to be a breakthrough in the Brexit talks. The European Union has given green light for the next phase of the negotiations.
Following this, German Chancellor Angela Merkel and French President Emmanuel Macron gave a joint press conference to signify European unity. The two leaders were upbeat about a number of subjects, including the European future, security, migration and the economy. DW's Georg Matthes with a summary of what they said.
The leaders have given green light to move forward to phase two following the recommendation of the European Commission. The key issue will now be to find a way forward into a transition phase before trade talks can actually start. One thing is absolutely crucial. They will need confirmation. They will need clarity from the British side, what they actually want, not what they do not want. A key division, of course, is still migration, and that is particularly the relocation mechanism that the EU is looking for. One is looking for a permanent mechanism how to deal with thousands of migrants that have particularly come to Greece and Italy, and how they can be relocated into other member states. There is a council decision that is obligatory, but that is not followed, particularly by countries in the east of Europe. And now they're trying to reform that system, and basically German Chancellor said we need to show solidarity, and that is also required from these states. How the EU will deal with that in the future, very hard to say. At the end, it might come down to a majority vote that then these countries in the east of Europe would have to live with.
That was DW's Georg Matthes in Brussels. Welcome back. In case you've just joined us, this is DW's Africa Link program. I'm Wanji Komwaura.
And I'm Jane Ayeka-Kumet. This program comes to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany, and we are live on Facebook, that is DW Africa.
Coming up next, the UN accuses the government of South Sudan of not doing enough to end impunity and human rights abuses in the war-torn country.
That really raises the responsibility of the government, of the leadership of all the warring factions. They need to make peace, because if this goes on, it's going to be almost impossible to turn the tide again.
And of course, it's Friday, so we'll be having our blog report coming shortly, as well as sports.
But first, it's exactly 4 years since the outbreak of the conflict in South Sudan. Since then, Africa's youngest nation has slipped into one violent conflict after another. Top United Nations human rights commissioners say the South Sudan government is not doing enough to end the cycle of abuses that have been perpetrated during the conflict. It has also not done enough to implement the conditions of the 2015 peace agreement.
And to that effect, the council urged that those who continue to perpetrate human rights violations must be held accountable to break the prevailing cycle of impunity. Yasmin Soka, a human rights expert who is in South Sudan to collect evidence on human rights abuses, has called for a quick establishment of a hybrid court to handle cases of human rights abuse. Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
South Sudan today enters the fourth year following an outbreak of the conflict in late 2013. But still, rights abuses continue across different parts of the country. Yasmin Soka says killings, rape, burning of houses, and displacements of people and other abuses are ongoing.
The best way of dealing with impunity is to hold those responsible accountable. And so I think on that score, we have not seen much.
Soka has been visiting South Sudan for the last 4 years. She says women bear the greatest impact of the abuses, especially sexual assault. Soka visited Wau, one of the towns which has faced several spikes of conflict between government forces and opposition. She says continuing threat of the rights abuses is visible in Wau. Andrew Klafan, a member of the UN Human Rights Commission, describes the continuing threat of rights abuses across South Sudan disastrous, saying civilians are being deprived even of basic needs.
I wouldn't like to say it's the worst in the world, but it's certainly in the bottom league, if you like. And the situation, as we've already said, with regards to education, health, access to food, but also the ongoing violence and the fear of violence is pretty incomparable to most other human rights crises around the world.
The two commissioners are expected to visit refugee camps in Ethiopia and Uganda, where they will meet regional and African Union leaders, including other senior UN officials, to push for regional efforts to ending impunity in the country. Soka explains.
You think about the joy with which South Sudan came into being, and you look at it now, so many years down the line, you ask yourself the question, how do we change this around? And that really raises the responsibility of the region, of the government, of the leadership, of all the warring factions. They need to make peace, because if this goes on, it's going to be almost impossible to turn the tide again.
Soka also calls for quick establishment of the hybrid court as directed in the 2015 peace agreement and a full implementation of Chapter 4 of the peace agreement, which calls for justice.
That was Wake Simon Wudu reporting from Juba. Now, we take you back to our top story, and that was Zimbabwe. And people have also been commenting. I mean, the two neighbor countries have been electing or holding their National Assembly conferences to elect the new party leaders, who will also, as it has been the case over time, will take over the presidency or candidature for presidency come next year. And we've been having people commenting. For instance, I have one comment here coming in from Ruji Yamana, Justina Kawa, who says the clock must not be reversed to bend to Westerners' wishes. Changes must be made, but looking forward and not backward. That's in reference to Zimbabwe.
And someone else also comments and adds, that is Ndeso Ndeso, if you want to attract foreign investment, then bow down to Western imperialism or face its wrath. Ask Mugabe. He will tell you all about it. This is the comment of one Ndeso Ndeso. Now, I think we should carry on to what we promised you, and that's the blog report.
Blog report.
For many youths on the Kenyan coast, blogging is not a very popular activity, as it requires patience and a lot of effort to take and upload pictures, but also write stories. But for Jamila Hassan, a popular female blogger in Kenya's second capital city, that's Mombasa, blogging is fun and a passion. Life in Mombasa is the name of her blog, which she started in 2014. She showcases history, culture, and modern-day life in her city through photography. Diana Wanyonyi caught up with her, and she started by asking her what inspired her to start blogging.
In 2014, every day when you look in the news, you'd hear like insecurities. This happened, that happened. If it wasn't that, it was some stereotypical stories like, oh, there's a ghost somewhere. I live here, Mombasa is safe. Like, there's a lot of positive news about Mombasa that people need to hear, that people don't know. So I just started documenting on my own, like taking photos and showing. So then a friend of mine was like, why don't you get a domain? Get a website that says lifeinmombasa.com. And then get a Facebook page and just showcase. So I ordered for a camera. I started learning how to take photos, how to edit. So I do everything on my own.
Jamila attributes her blog success to her family members and friends who encouraged her to keep showcasing Mombasa through the camera lens.
I get a lot of support from my family, from friends, everyone. A lot of people have supported me along the way. People who I always call for advice, like help me here, or what do you think? If I get an offer or something, like I always have friends who I always count on.
Her work has been recognized by the local government of Mombasa County.
I've won two awards. I won Best County Blog 2016 and I won Best County Blog 2017.
But Jamila has not always had a smooth journey in blogging. She meets Kenyans reluctant to share information, and they even forbid her to take photographs in some locations.
Sometimes I get people who don't want to give information because they're scared that I might be telling the story and I'll be gaining from it, and they won't. And also taking photos of some places, also people thought like you're going to sell the photos and gain from it, which they didn't want.
That has not stopped Jamila. She has another blog under the name Jami Travel Blog. She explains why she started the second blog.
I'm hoping in 2018 to go more into doing small videos where people can read, but also they can watch small videos. I love traveling, and if I go to Lamu or I go to Masai Mara, I write about it. So I thought maybe I should start another blog just to do that. It's called jamitravels.com. So that's just mainly my travel documentation. So when someone asks me about certain place or they want to see pictures, I just send them to the link and they can see.
Her advice to Kenyan youths is?
They're upcoming female bloggers. I would say just keep doing it, be consistent, and ask for help whenever you can. I don't shy away from asking for help. Like if somebody can help me, I always ask and I always get the help. So you never know who you'd meet and you'll never know who is willing to help. You'll be surprised. Do it. Don't wait for somebody else to do it.
Just do it. That is Jamila Hassan, a popular female blogger in Kenya. And she was speaking to our correspondent, Diana Wanyonyi.
Interesting, isn't it?
Absolutely. Nice just how... do it, you know. As young people, if you're sitting on an idea, just wake up and do it. Do not wait for someone to come and tell you, okay, maybe you should do this.
The right message to take me through the weekend. Well, it's that time of the week again when we talk about sports. And our sports editor, Jack Penfold, joins us to review what's been happening in the Bundesliga at the moment. And we started all with a look at Köln's ex-trainer, Peter Stöger, who after several losses in Köln, started off with a very good win at Borussia Dortmund. We saw this happening with FC Bayern, which upped it on its own game after changing its coach. Now, I asked Chuck what this tells us about the game of football and the coaches that train them.
Well, the thing is, Peter Stöger was actually very successful in Cologne. He got them promoted from Division 2, and then he got them into Europe for the first time in 25 years. But this season in the Bundesliga, they've had a terrible time. Lots of calls going against them, an awful lot of injuries. Almost everything went wrong that you can imagine going wrong. So they stuck with him as long as they could, just because they knew he is actually a very good coach. Then the interesting thing, as you said, he was picked up by Dortmund just a week after he got sacked in Cologne and won his first game there. What it tells us, I think, is sometimes good coaches have bad results and then they wind up going.
Yeah. Now, like you just said, Peter Stöger is certainly a good coach. He picked Cologne, like you indicated, from second Bundesliga and brought it up to the first league. And now we see Cologne again down. What does this tell us? Is Cologne, FC Köln, headed for the second Bundesliga again?
Oh, yeah, they're gone. They don't have a chance. I mean, I think that's pretty much the consensus. Everybody thought that last week against the fellow strugglers Freiburg, when they played at home in terrible snowy conditions, everybody said that was sort of like the final for them in a way. If they didn't get a result there, they were done. They went up 3-0. After half an hour, it looked like they were a different team under their new interim coach, Stefan Rutenbeck. And then in the second half, they blew it and they lost in time added on 4-3. I sort of did some math just quickly, and they would have to get more than 2 points out of every game, I think it is, in the second half. They'd have to win more than 12 games, so 13 games. Of course, points can be made with ties as well. It's virtually impossible for them. They're not eliminated mathematically, but nobody expects them to stay up this year.
Very minimal chances for FC Köln there. Now, let's talk about Hoffenheim and the trainer, Julian Nagelsmann. He's probably the youngest trainer in Bundesliga, and he's currently doing pretty well. I mean, when you look at the time when he took over the club last year in February, he was able to pull it up from the 17th position up to a more safer position, that's 15. What do we know about this man?
Well, he was. When he took over as coach, he was 28. That was in February of 2016, so it's actually a couple of seasons ago now. He started out very young as a coach. He had his career as a player ended at under-19 level because of knee injuries, so he started out very early. He started out as a scout under Thomas Tuchel, another well-known coach, and eventually became the successor to Huub Stevens, who was the successor to Marcus Gisdol a couple of years in Hoffenheim. And as you say, in that first season, got them up to 15th, so safety, and last year got them up to fourth place, which meant they were in a qualifying position for the Champions League, which they failed to get by Liverpool in the playoff for the Champions League, and had not a very good Champions League. They've now dropped down to the Europa League, but he's been doing very well, one of Germany's brightest young coaches.
Now, one last one to Real Madrid's reach to the World Cup qualifier, thanks to Cristiano Ronaldo's strike, which actually makes him the all-time best scorer in the Club World Cup. Now with 6 goals. Now, is this lead going to continue for Real Madrid?
Well, they're in the final on Saturday against Brazilian club Grêmio. Having said that, you know, they had quite a bit of trouble against Al Jazeera, who they played in the semifinal. They're not having the greatest season, Real Madrid. They're fourth in La Liga, 8 points down the table from the leaders Barcelona. But I think they should be able to beat Grêmio, who beat Pachuca 1-0. But certainly Real Madrid are not having their best season.
That's it from the sports world with our sports editor, Jack Penfold. Now, it's a very interesting way to wind up the weekend talking about sports. But what else, Wanjiku?
Ayeko, what else is actually, in case you do not know, let me let you in on a secret. What else is a new video format that you have to check out? It's published on our DW Africa Facebook page. And we are talking about the other news that do not make it to the headlines.
Wajiku, are you the one hosting it?
Yes, you got it right. With Eddie Mica Jr., of course, he would threaten me if I did not mention his name, of course.
It's right to mention people and give credit where it's due. And I know that I've already checked it out on our Facebook page and it's gotten quite a lot of praise as well.
It really did, and we appreciate all your support. So in case you don't know what we are talking about still, come on, guys. You need to get on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and check it out for yourself. Really.
Interesting. I remember watching the first episode was about finding jobs, and I felt that, well, this is an interesting, it must be a topic that interests the young people.
There are many of them out there trying
to look for jobs. And
yeah.
What else is probably the right place for them? Because they will always find what else is happening around the world.
And also something that we've realized is people are connecting on our Facebook page and sharing information with each other, which is the purpose of what else? Young people coming together to find solutions for themselves.
Someone called Jay has also been commenting, and he says it's really a great idea to have jobs gotten through this kind of website. That's all we had time for. Thank you for listening to Africa Link. I'm Jane Ayeko Kumet.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwaura.
Keep it to Africa Link and have a nice weekend.